Well, welcome everybody to the Women's Wednesday Night Bible Study. I have Megan and Karen with me this evening, as is usual, thank God. Hello, Megan and Karen.
Hello. Good evening, Robin.
And welcome everybody who has joined us. It is nice to get to join together again and read the Word of God together and be built up. So we're going to read chapter 3 and maybe 4 of Ruth tonight. Did either of you have anything you wanted to share before we start?
Nope.
Okie doke. So, before you start to read chapter 3, Karen, it is just, and I'm sure all know, it's a four-chapter book that we're all familiar with, but it is a story of a young woman's love or affection for her mother-in-law. And even after her husband's death, she clings to her mother-in-law, and that clinging and that vow to do so with only death parting them is one that we see in this story, and it's a lovely story. So with that, Karen, if you would start with chapter 3, verse 1 of the book of Ruth.
Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, "My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor. But make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lieth down that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do." And she said unto her, "All that thou sayest unto me, I will do."
Okay. In the event it is needful, this comes after the harvest of all the grains. And we know that Ruth happened upon Boaz's field and stayed in his field, excuse me, throughout the different harvests of the different grains. And here we come in where the harvest has occurred, and now they're going to separate the seed from the shaft or the stalk. And it's something that men do. And Naomi has, in verse 1 there, she says to Ruth, "Shall I not find rest for thee, that it may be well with thee?" And that, what she's saying here is, shall I not find a husband for you? That, you know, that Ruth will have security, a place and a family. Not that Naomi isn't her family, but provision may be the better word. And so she, in verse 2 there, she says, "And now is not Boaz of our kindred." And in Israel, we know that the Lord had commanded that if a man dies and left no seed or offspring, that his brethren were to marry his wife and bring forth seed unto the dead brother. And of course, with Naomi, both of her sons were dead, but there were other kinsmen other than brothers to Mahlon and, get the other one's name,
Chilion.
Thank you. It was one of those arms. So, with Boaz being a kinsman, Naomi gives Ruth instruction on how to bring forth this kinsman redemption, the raising again of Mahlon's, or raising of Mahlon's seed, that Boaz would basically maintain that name in Israel. That seed, that place, that inheritance that has now not going to occur because of the death of both of Elimelech's sons. And so she tells her to, you know, go clean herself up, wash herself, get dressed, anoint herself, and then to go down to the threshing floor and not let anyone know she's there, but when Boaz goes to lay down, to mark where he is, to know where he is, and when everybody is asleep, for her to go in and lay at his feet. This would be so that nobody knew that she was doing this. And in fact, we know that Boaz didn't even know. She did as Naomi said, and she went and she took note exactly where Boaz laid down. And when appropriate, she went in and uncovered his feet and laid at them. So, I don't know if either of you want to add there. Before we move on, it's a simple story, easy to see what's transpiring here.
I remember when I met Steve and I saw him for, you know, part of 5 days, we left and I went to North Carolina, and Rick and Sue brought my mom up there. And Rick said to me, if you want Steve for a husband, you need to ask the Lord for him. And I said, that's forward. And he said, Ruth was forward. And those were his words. I've always remembered them. And I thought, yes, so she was. You know, this is not, in this day and age, perhaps going and lying at a guy's feet might be less, you know, more acceptable. But I'm sure this was not the done thing with a virtuous woman at that time.
You know, and I have to say that women don't go lie at a man's feet today. You know, she was not...
That's true.
She was not going there and kind of like some... trying to provoke him in some kind of sexual manner. She was just going there to bring to attention his duty as a near kinsman. And she did it without... it wasn't in a manner that degraded either of them.
Sure. She was also, you know, she layered his... Firstly, she did what Naomi said, as was her habit. But she also she uncovered his feet and kind of, you know, lay there too, and at his feet. But I think, I may be wrong, but that she was looking in a way essentially for a covering. Perhaps that's what this thing did.
You mean as Boaz to be her covering?
Yes.
Is that the sense? Yes, and I think that we see that in her speaking what Naomi told her to speak. I believe that what
sure.
you said is will prove true here. But yeah, Ruth isn't there selling herself. But she is there doing as Naomi has instructed. And the one thing that strikes me about the fact that she, the way this we see her in here, and thinking of my own self and how inattentive I can be when instruction is being given to me. And the only way to do that which you're asked is to pay attention. And I'm pretty certain the only way to pay attention is to not be about your own business and thoughts and mindsets and all that kind of stuff, but actually putting that off and taking the time to literally just listen. And she's a good example of that. So something to learn. We all know how it is to be thinking while somebody else is speaking, and you just can't listen when you're doing that. So
you mentioned that, and I know you have, you know, you've been working on the story of Esther, and as you say that, the sort of things are when somebody tells us to do something that seems like for us to go, say, what? You want me to do what? Kind of response. Our automatic, well, I can't speak for everybody. My probably natural response might be to say, I don't think I can do it. I can't do it. I've, you know, find all kinds of reasons as to why that's a wrong thing. And you see with both Ruth and Esther that when they're told to do something, even with Esther, to the potential of her that same day losing her life, they hear it and they do it.
Yes. Yes. With Esther, I will say one thing. She took 3 days of fasting and prayer before she did it. Not that I'm saying anything bad, but Ruth did do it the same day.
Well, I mean it in the sense that she took that time to fast, but when she went before the king that very same day, she may have had her life over, you know.
Certainly. And when you figure 2 days later, when she told him her petition, I mean, his number one guy, his right-hand man, she was accusing. So until he made the decision, she didn't know, and yet she stood, and it's a beautiful story. It is a different story than this one. But nevertheless, we do see that Ruth did as she was told. And it'd be easy for the natural response would have looked different than this in most of us, that's for sure.
Yeah, and what Megan said, that really struck me too, is that, you know, being told to do something like that, I'd have that same reaction too. Like, you want me to do what? And she did it. And she had told Naomi that she would do exactly what she told her to do.
Yep.
And she did it.
Yep. All that thou sayest unto me, I will do. So, Miss Karen, if you would pick up.
I'm on verse 6.
Yes.
And she went down unto the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. And she came softly, and uncovered his feet, and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid, and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, Who art thou? And she answered, I am Ruth thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman.
Okay, you can stop there for a moment. That goes back to what Megan was saying. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. So that is to, take the responsibility of both the kinsman redemption, but to bring her into his household and to be a covering unto her. Which, Megan, I didn't say it the way you said it, if you'd like to repeat it how you said it, but this is where it is in agreement with what you said earlier. Are you with us there?
I am. I'm just laughing. I'm thinking my response to your statement is, they can listen to it later, rewind. I don't actually remember how I said it. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. But this is that which you spoke just in...
asking for a covering.
Yes.
Yes. Something like that.
So another thing here worth noting, and something that we have looked at before, is the testimony of Ruth as a handmaiden. And You know, in looking up the word handmaiden, just kind of an interesting thing to think about, there's two definitions, and they both basically are the same definition, which is a female bond slave or slave, but one definition is used when you have, it was used for Bilhah and Zilpah, which were Leah and Rachel's handmaids, who bore Jacob four of the of his children. It was a term used for Hagar, whereas this particular one here is not used in conjunction with a handmaid that is a handmaid by position, which means it's one of choice, you know. Hagar did not have a choice. She was a handmaid. She had a choice as to what kind of a handmaid she would be, even as Zilpah and Bilhah did. But here Ruth is making a statement of being a handmaid by choice. And then she brings Boaz's, well, there's a requirement here that he does the duty of the kinsman. So, if you would pick up there with Boaz's response to Ruth's answer in verse 10.
And he said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast shewed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followedest not young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I."
Hold on just a minute there. Let's go back up there. So, verse 10, "Blessed be thou the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast shewed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, whether rich or poor." Now, I believe here he's referring to, because when you go down into verse 11, it says, "For all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman." Well, what is this book even told us about Ruth that gives testimony that as to why she was a virtuous woman? And "blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast shewed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning." And really, that which the city knew was her love, affection, and service to Naomi. And here Boaz is giving testimony to the fact that the strength and virtue that they saw in her cleaving unto Naomi, and when she clave unto Naomi, she left her own family, she left her own people, and she came into a strange land, and she has served Naomi, and she has submitted to Naomi's counsel and instruction. And here he notes, in addition to all of that, this young woman, rather than going after a young man who would be of interest to her in a romantic sense or something, she actually continues in her service to Naomi, so that she has showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning. And it is here that she then also is going to raise up seed under her deceased husband. And that's a notable thing that Boaz takes note of. I don't know if you all have other things that we know about Ruth that would be examples of her being a virtuous woman, but those are ones that I throw out there.
Well, Well, she's obviously, you know, has an affection for her mother-in-law, and has chosen her God over everything else that she's ever had, and you know, is somewhat of probably, I mean, you cannot be a virtuous woman and be proud. And she has been, you know, gleaned the fields where the poor go. She has been poor, and it's not been beneath her to go and pick there. She has done as Boaz has said, when he said, eat with us and stay with his maidens. And, you know, she's not all about herself.
No, she isn't. In that verse 11 there too, he says, I will do to thee all that thou requirest. And he actually says he will, because it says, for all the city and my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. It is a right thing. And she has done that which was right, and has now required of him that he do the same. And so he lets her know that, yes, in fact, he will. But then, Karen, you started, and if you want to go back to verse 12 there, he, in, you know, gives more of an answer to her.
And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman. Howbeit, there is a kinsman nearer than I. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee, as the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning.
Okay. So here Boaz knows the relationship, and he knows that he is not the nearest kinsman. So he doesn't really have a right. The nearest kinsman has kind of like what we call nowadays right of first refusal, so to speak. So he lets her know that he will go to that kinsman, and if that kinsman will not do the part of a kinsman, Boaz will, but he will first give that kinsman the opportunity to do so. And he tells her to lie there until the morning, and then, Karen, if you'd like to just finish that, this chapter.
And she lay at his feet until the morning, and she rose up before one could know another. And he said, let it not be known that a woman came into the floor. Also he said, bring the veil that thou hast upon thee, and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley, and laid it on her. And she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, who art thou, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, these 6 measures of barley gave he me. For he said to me, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law. Then said she, sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day.
You know, one thing that strikes me is, because she was but at his feet on that threshing floor, there was nothing impure that had happened here. So if this next of kinsmen would do the part of the kinsman redemption, nothing has occurred here that would in any way undermine or lessen Ruth in this. It was really a very simple interaction between these two people that, you know, there was nothing wrong with it. You know, there was nothing anybody could have pointed a finger at and brought any kind of condemnation. Megan?
Two things. One is, one is that you see one of the examples, perhaps, of Ruth laying aside everything that she was raised in if you will, her people, her gods, her everything, is that this was a law of the Lord. And we know that the law of the Lord, the law of Moses, which is the law of the Lord, is not the ways of man. And so her going through this route of the near kinsman sort of thing is a further testimony to her cleaving to the God of Israel. And the other thing was, when she comes to Naomi in the morning, you know, she leaves before it's light, but she gets to Naomi and Naomi says, "Who art thou, my daughter?" She knows it's Ruth. She's wanting to know, are you the wife of Boaz? Or the betrothed, if you will, you know. Who are you? What happened?
Yeah. And, you know, in verse 18 there, two women being still and waiting. I'm glad you laughed.
What a wonderful thing.
It is
they probably dealt with
that.
They may have dealt with the six measures of barley and kind of, you know, did whatever they did to prepare it for whatever they were going to use it for. That.
Maybe they had to can some tomatoes or something, right?
Yes.
That's what Megan would have done.
I was doing it with beans tonight, so that's why I mentioned it. Just, you know, you got to use it somehow, so getting it ready.
And probably Naomi will. Saying that Boaz, she was sure that Boaz was going to do this day what he said he was going to do. You know,
yeah.
He is going to do it this day, she knew.
And he wouldn't rest.
Yeah. And so they didn't know what the end was either. Ruth knows that she will be the wife of either Boaz or this nearer kinsman, and we don't see that she knows who it is. I'm sure Naomi does. But either way, you know, whatever the end is, she's told actually to sit still. And so they do. And that's another thing worthy of noting, how hard that can be to do. And yet the implication is that's exactly what she did. And, you know, it's worthy of noting that Boaz is it's a man of generosity. You know, he made sure that when Ruth gleaned, she had plenty. It wasn't she wasn't pawing through to pick up a kernel here and a kernel there. And here she was sent home with a goodly amount of barley for Naomi and her. And yeah, that's a right thing. He had it, and he, you know, took care of his own, and these were relatives, and so that's cool. So, Gail wrote, lots of work to fill the waiting. She was told to sit still, though, so maybe she, in fact, did. It is worth thinking about, isn't it, how fidgety we can be. So, Miss Karen, chapter 4.
Then went Boaz up to the gate and sat him down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, "Ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city, and said, "Sit ye down here." And they sat down. And he said unto the kinsman, "Naomi, that is come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land, which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, Buy it before the inhabitants, and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there is none to redeem it beside thee, and I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. Then said Boaz, what day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar mine own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it.
Okay. So even as Naomi knew, and as Boaz had said, he went to where business was transacted, and that was the gate of the city. And when the nearest kinsman came by, and you notice we don't know his name, he has him come and sit by me, and he has 10 men of the elders of the city sit too as witnesses of this transaction, because he's going to now transact a business, and it's going to be finished, and it's going to be settled. And so he lets him know that, you know, he brings the kinsman issue up, and that Naomi has Elimelech's land to sell. And did he want it? Because he had the rights to it. And the next person was Boaz. And the kinsman, of course, said, yeah, he wants it. He'll purchase it. And then when Boaz brings to his remembrance his duty to raise up seed unto Mahlon through Ruth, Mahlon's widow, the kinsman now backs down. He doesn't want that responsibility. He doesn't want to raise up seed unto another man, but rather wants his entire inheritance to be his, and his offspring to be unto his seed, not unto Mahlon's. And so he gives up the right. I suspect that's called less than honorable.
It's also called, I suspect, somewhat matril. I don't know. I'm not a guy. But it is interesting how Boaz brings up the property and the wife in two separate things. You know, brings the property first, which is a very attractive, you know, offer. But, you know, it comes with the wife, and he opts out of that.
He was interested in it at first.
I think Gail's point is worth noting. He was selfish and not doing right by the Lord's law. I mean, the Lord said that's what needs to be done, and he chose against the law of the Lord.
And, you know, if you look at that kinsman redemption, it was to maintain, you know, there was an inheritance that God had given unto Israel. And it was to maintain that inheritance really from beginning to end. And so if your brother, like in this case due to death, did not leave someone to take his place and to inherit his portion, his next of kin was to bring forth seed unto him to do so. And yeah, this man did not. And I think if you go back and look, it's kind of interesting, because it was actually a harsh response when a person refused to do the kinsman redemption. Here we just see where Boaz then says, okay, I will then buy it, and this next of kin, I believe is the one we'll see, takes off his shoe, and it is that business transaction is transacted. He gives up his right, and Boaz then gains the property, including Ruth, of Mahlon, and of Naomi. So
You know, with the, when you're talking about the inheritance of the Lord, if you remember, when they crossed the Jordan, the Lord gave certain tribes certain space. And, you know, certain areas or what have you. And that was then divided up amongst the people. And even if there was the year of Jubilee, that every 50 years the land returned, even if it had been sold or lost in, you know, however means, it was returned to those to whom the Lord had originally given it, so that it would stay, as you said, forever. Of course, you know, Israel itself has, I think, changed to some degree. I don't know exactly. It may be smaller, it may be slightly different. But nonetheless, that was what it was talked about in the law, with that kind of thing. And so you have the redemption coming up here too.
It shows God taking care of the things that occur to maintain, you know, he set into motion a plan that would secure the inheritance for each tribe. And I believe, yes, it's worth going back in and looking a little at. And when you do go back in and read the law, these are the kind of things that may stand out to you now, having read the book of Ruth, and you see God's provision. And also, you know, you gain an understanding of what the point of it was. It's easy to read that stuff and not really get what the point is. But here we have it portrayed before us. So that's a pretty cool thing. So verse 7, Karen.
Now this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing, for to confirm all things. A man plucked off his shoe and gave it to his neighbor, and this was a testimony in Israel. Therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, buy it for thee. So he drew off his shoe. And Boaz said unto the elders and unto all the people, ye are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren and from the gate of his place. Ye are witnesses this day.
Okay. And all the so there we see the business transaction. And you also see Boaz very clearly stating what just transpired. So there's no doubt as to what the near kinsman gave up and what Boaz now purchased from Naomi. And Megan made note that if you want to go back in and look at this issue of redemption, it's in Leviticus 25. So it is worth noting that it is a clear business transaction.
Can I add something?
Yes.
I remember there was something about the shoe thing. And in Deuteronomy 25, it says, I think it's related. Let's just check it. This taking off the shoe thing, it was more of a slap in the face, if you will, at the person who wasn't doing it.
Are you looking up Deuteronomy 25?
Yes. Do you want me to read it?
Sure.
Okay, let's see. Starting, I guess, with verse 5 and going through verse 10. If brethren dwell together, and one of them die, and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her, and take her to him to wife, and perform the duty of an husband's brother unto her. And it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel. And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate unto the elders, and say, My husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of his city shall call him and speak unto him. And if he stand to it and say, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders, and loose his shoe from off his foot, and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, So shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called in Israel the house of him that hath his shoe loosed. So it was not necessary, you know. While I was looking for that, I missed what you said about the shoe. I know I've always heard it as being something related to how business was dealt with, but it seems that it was actually really a slap in the face to someone who would not do the brother's duty.
Megan, I am not sure it's something we could look at, but it may not negate that taking off the shoe was a testimony in a business transaction. But notice, sure, this man did not take off his shoe. And they loosed it and spit upon, I forget what it said, and called him the man whose shoe was loosed.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? I have not studied it, so I don't want to, sure, speak there, but I knew I had read that in that spitting part. It was, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to make that choice, that a man who refused to do the part of a kinsman, and that would be what he would be called, and that would be what it would mean, because he would not raise up seed unto his brother's inheritance. And that point is not brought out in the book of Ruth, which I thought was interesting too. There is no written comment on the nearest kinsman. We only see that Boaz did the duty.
The one thing that does seem clear is that the law of the Lord for his people, this man, this near kinsman, who is nameless in the Lord's word, turned aside from that. And so, and that wasn't a good thing.
Yeah. It never is. I thank God for his mercy and grace that, and his times of joining together like this, where we can come together and desire not to not submit to the Word of God. Because these are those things that provoke us, you know?
I didn't have a lovely ending of the day today. I came downstairs a little having, you know, not, oh, I'm so happy it's Bible study. However, I know, and, you know, as we read the Word, my spirit is lifted. And so where I am now and where I was an hour ago is not the same place, simply because the Lord's Word is good, and it is life to our spirit, and it is worth spending time in.
That is very true.
It's food that we need.
So, Karen, if you'd like to pick up there and see now the people's response in verse 11 to this.
And all the people that were in the gate and the elders said, We are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which too did build the house of Israel, and do thou worthily in Ephratah, and be famous in Bethlehem. And let thy house be like the house of Phares, whom Tamar bare unto Judah, of the seed which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman.
So stop there for one moment. So this is, you know, I was thinking about this today. You know, we speak blessings all the time in the name of Christ, don't we? I mean, we even say God bless at the end of Bible studies and at the end of conversations. And you see that, and I was thinking about it too, because in the one true God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Jesus, this is the only faith in which this really is true. This idea of being able to speak and have hope in a blessing. And we do it one to another, and we see it here. And so these people speak a blessing, the elders and all. And I wanted to point out to everyone, I thought this was rather interesting, because the word virtuous comes up three times in the Old Testament. Once in this book, we saw Boaz said, for this, we all know that you're a virtuous woman. Once in Proverbs 12, and of course then Proverbs 31, what is we all know as the virtuous woman chapter of Proverbs. But this word worthily, and this is being spoken not to a man, actually, because all the other three, the three times this word is translated virtuous, it is in the context of a woman. But here the word worthily is the same Hebrew word as virtuous. I thought that was interesting. I thought I ought to know what the heck it meant, you know, so I looked it up. And Ephrata is another word for Bethlehem, so it is a... And I don't know why they had two, you know, but it speaks of the same place. So do thou worthily, you know, courageously, valiantly, in Ephrata, and be famous in Bethlehem. He is famous to those of us who know the Word of God.
Yep.
So, if you pick up there, Karen, in verse 12. Oh, did you already read verse 12? Yes.
I did.
So verse 13.
So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And the women said unto Naomi, Blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. And Naomi took the child, and laid it in her bosom, and became nurse unto it.
That's and the good. You can stop there for the moment. So, you know, right there in verse 13, we see Boaz actually perform his duty. He went in unto Ruth, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And then we move back to Naomi. The woman said unto Naomi, Blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. The beginning of this book, Naomi was without a kinsman in the sense of immediate family. She obviously had a kinsman because she had Boaz. You know, they were relatives. But she had lost her husband and her children. And here, as they say in verse 15, For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him.
The other thing is, this is actually Mahlon's son. Yes. Remember, he's raising up seed. The firstborn son is actually Malan's. It gets Malan's inheritance. So this, the fact that the Lord hasn't left her without a kinsman, this is, in effect, Malan's son.
And Naomi's grandson.
Yes.
Which is a wonderful thing. It's a beautiful picture, you know. In the beginning, she says, "Don't no longer call me Naomi," which I believe means pleasant, but call me Mara, which means bitter. And now, you know, that's all behind her, and we don't hear that kind of talk anymore. And Naomi took the child and laid it in her bosom and became nurse unto it. So Ruth continues in her love for her mother-in-law, and does not withhold the child from her.
And, you know, you see this oftentimes with elderly folk who've had a lot of bitterness or what have you in their life, that there is a restoration of their life. And you see that with Naomi here when Ruth has this baby, the son that is her grandchild, that he is a restorer of her life and her, I'm sure it was uplifting to her, where she had, as you say, started out the book having lost those who were most important to her or most dear to her, and here she gains someone and is able to have an enjoyable time, you know, life, enjoy the blessings of the Lord, where before she had seen them to be lacking.
Yes.
Not that they were, but that was her experience.
She suffered loss in the beginning, and now she is, you know, has the gain. And you know, the fruit of Ruth's love for her has been a constant thing, you know, that steadfastness, and that takes courage. And yet, you know, the Bible does say, "Do not be weary in well doing, for in due season you shall reap." And it is a lovely picture of the restoration of hope. So, Karen, if you would finish reading this chapter, this book. Karen, are you with us?
Oh, sorry about that. I didn't unmute and thought I had. I read the whole verse, though. And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, "There is a son born to Naomi." And they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez begat Hezron, and Hezron begat Ram, and Ram begat Amminadab, and Amminadab begat Nahshon, and Nahshon begat Salmon, and Salmon begat Boaz, and Boaz begat Obed, and Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David.
Now, one thing I want to point out about this genealogy here, and it is important because Jesus fulfilled prophecy, and Judah was the tribe through whom Jesus was coming, and his son Perez was the son through whom Jesus' lineage goes back to Judah. So here we have from Judah to King David, and then we know that with David comes prophecy again that speaks of Jesus coming through the line of David. And so here in the book of Ruth, we have established that genealogy again, and you can go into the New Testament, and both in Matthew and Luke, and see it. And the word Obed, the name Obed, I believe means serving. And the idea that her neighbors gave him a name, you know, I was thinking this reminded me of when John the Baptist was born, and when Elizabeth said his name was John, the neighbors are like, well, it can't be John because there's nobody in his family named John. And of course, his father asked for a writing tablet and wrote his name as John, and his tongue was loosed. So I would suspect that they suggested the name Obed and it was agreed upon. And he was the great-grandfather of, he was the grandfather of David, Boaz being the great-grandfather. So.
Can I say something quickly?
Yes.
On the lineage thing?
Yes.
We've already talked about, you know, a lot, the near kinsman, and that this Obed was, in all respects, Chilion's son. And yet Chilion's not mentioned
Malin's
in the genealogy
son.
Of Jesus.
Sorry, Malin. Yeah.
But he's still not mentioned.
Yes.
And Boaz is, who was actually, although he was, you know, biologically his dad, he was not actually in the law. And what you see is Obed would have received his father's inheritance in the natural sense, but Boaz was a man of faith, the same way you see Uriah as being a man of faith. And so he is mentioned in Jesus' lineage because Bathsheba was the wife of the faithful man, and so he is mentioned. And here you see Boaz as a faithful man being mentioned in Jesus' lineage if you look in the New Testament.
Yes. And we're about out of
Rahab.
Time. Go ahead, Karen. But we are about out of time.
Okay. I was just going to mention Rahab, but we're out of time.
No, go ahead. You have time. You have about 30 seconds.
Rahab was Boaz's mother. Was it?
Yes.
And she was faithful too, and mentioned in the Bible.
Yeah. Amen. Well, God bless everyone, and thank you for joining us, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.